Hello, my spooky friends.
My name is Cassie.
And I'm Caitlin.
And welcome in to I'd Survive. I watched something very exciting this week. Finally. And I mean, I'm not going to talk about it right now because I'm going to spend the whole episode talking about it. So what have you been up to?
Well, honestly, like if we can be so for real with you guys right now, these two episodes are filmed a few days apart. So what I said in the last episode is pretty much still where I'm at. I'm still in Subathon and now I haven't really watched anything else horror-wise.
Except...
what did I watch?
Alien, girl.
Oh my god, wait. Okay.
I'm sitting here like, I can't wait to talk about Alien. You're like, I haven't watched anything new.
I haven't watched anything. Dude, my entire brain is a pile of mush right now.
No, I feel you. I can't believe Subathon is still going. It's wild.
Today might be the last day. We shall see. But no, I did. I watched Alien finally, which is crazy because that's such like a classic horror film. And I'm just like, what I kept thinking of the whole time I'm watching it is like, I know my dad has talked about it and he watched it when he was a kid. And if I had watched that when I was a kid, I think I would have been traumatized.
Oh, for sure.
Like, yeah. That seems like a horrifying experience to have as a child.
Yeah. And I'm not even that scared by, like, I guess, creature feature, like, monsters. I've always been more scared of, like, the human villains. Mm-hmm. But this is one monster where definitely as a child it would have been under my bed.
Oh, yeah. For sure. I mean, the design on the alien is so, so cool. Which,
yeah.
It's interesting because before I watched it, I did know what it looked like. And I feel like... in the movie itself, you don't even really get a good look at it, even through the end. Like, it's always very shielded. And I'm curious to see what the sequels do as well.
Yeah. That first one, it's like very, very much in suspense. It's funny because when I watched Alien for the first time, I didn't know that I knew what it looked like.
Oh.
Once it was revealed, I was like, oh my gosh, I think I've seen this before, but like, wow. I didn't know it was that movie. So I was still in the dark about like I got the added suspense of like, I don't know what this thing is. And then when it revealed itself, I was like, oh my god, that, yep. I know that. Cool. No, I wanted to ask you though about it because I know 50-50, I know it's 50-50 for you when it comes to the quote classics. Mm-hmm. And like, for example, you're not a big Halloween fan. True. But you were pleasantly surprised by Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yes.
So like, where does Alien fall?
I feel like Alien is hard to judge because I obviously like it is a horrifying movie and it is a horror movie, but it's such a different type. Oh, because like you said, like creature monster stuff like is not usually my thing. Yeah. I think in terms of like how scary it is, it's horrifying. The monster, honestly, I think the first monster form is the scariest personally. Mm-hmm. The little spider-like creature.
Oh yeah,
looking thing. I mean I really liked it. Is it one of my favorite movies ever? No, but like I'm happy I watched it and I'm trying to put myself in the headspace of watching it when it came out because for when it came out, it's insanely well done.
Yeah, I was like so excited. I watched that with my little brother who's 13 and he was like, oh my god, this came out in 1979. I was like, right. I know.
That's the crazy thing.
Yeah. And I'm so excited for you to watch or to play Alien Isolation now.
Yes, that is part of why I wanted to watch it because I'm looking forward to playing that game. I mean, I'm kind of looking forward. I'm a little scared, but.
It's so, you're going to love it. You're going to be so good at it and I can't wait.
We'll see. We'll see.
Before I get into my movie, I guess I haven't like watched any other horror or anything, but I do want to mention that I was watching this girl on YouTube who, is called Possessed by Horror. I don't know if you've heard of her.
No.
She does like horror movie commentary and reviews more than like reactions and everything. Mm. But she had like a video come out this past week that was ranking the horror years. And she was doing the decade 2010s and ranking each year of like best horror.
Ooh, okay, that's cool.
And she mentioned The Ritual at one point.
No way.
And she said that she had read the book and that the book is literally 5 stars and made her love the movie even more. So now it's just like, okay, I'm even more excited about eventually getting there.
You know what? Yeah, I got to read that book.
Yeah.
I do really like that movie. I hope you do watch it, and you got to let me know if you do, how you feel about the creature and everything.
Oh, whenever we watch a movie that was from a previous episode, we always have to talk about it.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I finally watched Companion.
I'm so excited. I'm so hyped for this.
I'm excited. This is like our first 2025, because we thought that Presence was 2025, but it turned out 2024.
Yeah, it was actually a year older than we thought.
So I asked you like in a text, but I'm going to ask you again and just make sure. You know literally nothing about this movie?
Literally nothing. The only thing I've seen is the cover. I think there's a girl on it wearing not a bonnet, but like something on her head. And I think the font is pink. And that's literally what I have for you.
It's
so,
so girl coded. Yes, I love the cover.
Giving girly pop.
So Companion is a sci-fi thriller movie directed by Drew Hancock. And most of his work has been writing versus directing. And I would like to have you know that he wrote the screenplay for Fred 3 Camp Fred back in 2012.
What? No, he did not. Excuse me?
So get ready for that vibe.
Okay.
Companion was also produced by Zach Kreger, director of Barbarian.
Oh, okay.
And Roy Lee, who was a producer on Barbarian, as well as It Chapter 1 and 2.
My movies. Yeah. Those are my movies.
We got some good people on here.
Oh, we do.
And we're going to be following a main couple in the movie, and they are played by Sophie Thatcher and Jack Quaid. So Sophie is best known for her roles in The Boogeyman 2023, Heretic 2024, both ones I've heard of, neither I've seen. But I do know and have seen her in the first season of Yellow Jackets. She's like a Yellow Jackets regular, I think.
Gotcha. Okay.
Which is like, that just keeps on blowing up every time new stuff drops.
Uh-huh.
And then I know Jack Quaid best from the show The Boys, and also just being Dennis Quaid's son.
I was going to say, is this a relation to Dennis Quaid? Okay.
Yes. He's good. He's like a great comedic actor. Like, he has great comedic timing. The way he delivers a line is so, like, this is one of those movies, I have to be real, it's hard to like capture the tone of this movie, because it does veer into camp at points, but it has a very serious underlying message at the same time. And I think it's just the actors and the way they deliver and like perform is what adds the camp and the humor. So it's a very dialogue heavy movie too. So I wish I could just include everything. I'm ready to just sit here and read the script to you, but I can't do that.
Fair enough. So,
let's get into the recap.
Woo!
We start in a grocery store, and we see the beautiful Sophie Thatcher pushing her shopping cart down an aisle. Her character's name is Iris. She's very put together, perfect silk blue top, dainty necklace, a matching headband, and she's taking her time looking at the food, as you do at the grocery store. She makes her way to the peaches, picks one up, and takes a little whiff like it's a flower in a garden. And while she's smelling this peach, she looks up and sees that a man on the other side of this like peaches display is staring at her.
Oh.
And it's not giving Watcher. It's not in a creepy way.
I immediately thought of Watcher. I'm not even gonna lie.
You're like, oh no, we're in a grocery store. Someone's looking at us. Trauma. No, it's like he's looking at her like he's endeared by her. You can tell he just thinks she's beautiful. And once she catches him looking, he's like immediately embarrassed and looks away.
Okay.
And this man is Jack Quaid playing Josh.
Josh.
And she must think that he's cute because she kind of smiles to herself. She's a little giddy. And then they're both looking at each other with the little smiles on their faces. And Josh decides to go for it and strike up a conversation.
Okay, but Josh, let's go. Oh, did you say but?
I did say but.
Oh, man.
just as he starts to say something, and it sounds like he's literally about to say, "Do you come here often?" Which is like a wild pickup line at a grocery store.
At a grocery store is crazy.
But he grabs an orange from its display, and a whole mountain of oranges cascades down to the grocery store floors.
Oh, nope. And I never show my face again.
Yeah, you just walk away from that. What, like, what can you do? But he's like, oh shit, and he's scrambling to try and pick them up from falling, and it's no, like, you can't, it's like chasing after a ping pong ball. Like, you can't pick up the fallen oranges. It's embarrassing.
Wait, can I say something quick?
Yes.
Like, last week I was at the grocery store and I got blueberries and I went to take them out of my cart and put them on the belt and they opened and they spilled all over the floor and I've never been more embarrassed in my life.
Oh my God. What did you do? Do you clean it up? Do you tell someone?
Dude.
Because like, are you going to buy them?
No, long story short, it was like self-checkout and there was another lady there and she turned around and she like gasped and she was like, and I was like, no, but she was like, oh my God, like that's something that would happen to me. And then there's this old lady working and she's like, just kind of looks at me and comes over and gets the broom. And I'm like, oh my God, kill me now. It was
just standing there.
I was just like, okay. I like tried helping pick stuff up. I was like, this is so bad, but you know, so yeah, I can relate to this guy a little bit.
Yeah, I feel it. I get embarrassed super easily. He does like play it off, I guess. Like, he doesn't make it overly awkward. It just is what it is. It's like, okay, what can you do? It's obviously no use though, like trying to stop this mountain of oranges falling over. And our girl is just standing there like, oh wow, like not sure what I should do or say right now, like just watching this happen. And once they've all fallen, Josh looks up at Iris and there's a beat of silence where it's like, okay, you think I'm a total dork now. But instead she starts laughing and then he starts laughing and it's all very cute.
Oh, okay. Cutie.
And he goes, God damn, that was smooth. And Iris is like, yeah, so smooth. Okay.
And awkward.
Yeah. And they introduce themselves to each other, Josh and Iris. And from there, we cut to Josh and Iris in a car together. He's driving and she's in the passenger seat. They are officially together now and have been for a while. We don't know exactly how long, but I would say, I don't know. It's got to be minimum over 6 months, 6 months to a year. I don't know.
Okay. What a cute way to meet somebody.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, nobody like ever gets to meet like this.
No, it doesn't happen. That's so cute.
You know the phrase meet cute?
Yes.
It's like one of those, which I would love to just see it happen in front of me. I'd be popcorn out, so excited, because usually it's just the apps now and it's boring. They are headed to his friend's lake house for a weekend trip. Josh is telling Iris to wake up and she yawns awake. It's been a bit of a long road trip, but they'll be there soon. And she tells him that she was having the best dream about the day that they first met at the grocery store and how perfect it was, which like, yes. Yes, mm-hmm. We mentioned that. We're so happy for you guys. That's so nice for you.
Good for you.
He kind of laughs about it fondly, but like with an eye roll because he's clearly still embarrassed about those oranges. And Iris looks down at the GPS screen in the car and notices that it shows them off road. So she's like, what road is this? It's not even on the map. And he's like, yeah, I don't think this is the road. I think this is the driveway. And we see a big blue lake house come into view, very isolated. The driveway's got to be like a mile long minimum.
Oh.
And they're both in awe at how nice this house is when they're walking up with their bags. It's his friend Kat's boyfriend's house. So this is like a friends / couples weekend. Okay. And obviously outside of Josh and Iris, we are going to be hanging out with Kat and her boyfriend, Sergey, who owns the house.
Okay.
And then Eli and his boyfriend, Patrick. And apparently Kat told Josh that this house was like a little rustic cabin in the woods. And he's like, damn, I think we might have differing opinions on the meaning of the word cabin and also the word rustic and also little. It's like, this is ginormous. Iris is kind of trailing back a little as they're making their way up the front path. And Josh notices and can tell that something's wrong. So he sets his luggage down and is like, okay, just tell me what's wrong. You know you can't lie to me.
Mm-hmm.
And Iris sighs and is like, I'm going to do something stupid or say something stupid and I'm going to embarrass you and they're going to laugh at me. They're going to hate me. They already hate me.
Oh,
and
God.
He's like, yeah, he's like, whoa, like Jesus Christ, Iris, we've been planning this trip for months and this is just coming out now, like 20 feet from the fucking door. She looks like she feels bad now, but there's not really anything that she can say or do about this. Like, they're here. So he reassures her that his friends don't hate her. And she's like, no, I know that Kat does.
Oh.
And he goes, yeah, maybe, but she hates everyone.
Oh, okay. Okay. I guess that's comforting enough, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. Question mark.
Question mark.
And he gives her this little pep talk that's supposed to make her feel better, during which we find out that his pet name for her is Beep Boop.
Oh.
I'm not a fan of that. Never heard that one before.
I'm trying to imagine that right now. If someone was like, hey, my little Beep Boop. Nah, no, I'm not. It's giving like Betty Boop. I'm not about it.
No. It's definitely a big weakness in this relationship. And the end of his pep talk ends with advice that she should just not be weird and mopey and just smile and act happy.
Oh, okay, perfect.
So that's great.
Solved. Yeah.
Now we're like, oh, maybe you are an asshole. I don't know.
Yeah, really, though. Like, that's if you ever feel alone, don't. That is the energy that it's giving.
Yes. Like, he's confusing because he does have a bit of a charm and he's just kind of funny the way that he talks. But then when you think about it, it's like, oh, that was kind of mean. Mm-hmm. When they ring the doorbell, Kat answers the door, and she's very excited to see Josh. They're chatting, bouncing off each other, clearly good friends. And then Josh kind of darts his eyes sideways at Iris, like telling Kat to say hi to Iris.
Yeah.
Who she's been ignoring this whole time. So she does. She says hi to Iris. And Iris is eager to be overly friendly. And she's like, hi, Kat. It's so good to see you. And Kat sarcastically responds, yeah, so good.
Oh.
And then there's like this awkward silence where they just stare at each other with like try hard fake smiles.
That's so uncomfortable. I don't want to be here.
Yeah. Yeah. So Iris definitely isn't in her head about Kat at all.
Yeah, it's, no.
The energy's there right away.
Yikes.
We cut to the kitchen where the rest of the friends are. Patrick and Eli are both really nice. Everyone's got wine. Everyone's a little tipsy. And Kat points out her boyfriend to our newcomers saying, oh, and Josh, you remember Sergey? And Sergey is just standing on the staircase off the kitchen staring at them with like a totally blank expression. And I, for a second, people might hate me for this, but for a second I thought that this was Pedro Pascal. It's definitely not. Like, first inspection, I thought. Second inspection, I was like, oh, whoops, definitely not.
My bad, but guys.
If you do need a vibe for to picture in your head, you could go with him, I guess.
Perfect. Okay, I will.
Yeah, so blank expression. But after a couple beats, he, like, throws his arms up with a smile. And we see that he's holding a cigar in one hand. And he says something in Russian. Mm. I don't know what. Why is there – there's so many, like, foreign languages in the movies that we cover.
Yeah, really, though.
It's kind of random. Like, all these American movies include foreign language in some way.
Interesting.
So, yeah, we don't know what he said, but he seems like a tough guy who snaps into, like, random friendliness, and you're not sure when he's going to snap back into, like, nothingness again, you know? I don't know. He's a weird one.
That would make me uncomfortable.
Yeah. I can't, like, when I can't get a gauge on someone, because I need to match the vibe, and I don't know what vibe to match there.
No.
But yeah, he gives Josh a hug, and he makes a comment about how beautiful Iris is, which just barely doesn't come off as creepy. Like, he's just saying, oh, like, beautiful.
Yeah.
But then he presses on, and he's like, I've heard a lot about you. And, of course, Iris is like, okay, all good, I hope.
Yeah.
And his response, Sergey's response to that, is just biting his lip and staring at her like he's, like, undressing her in his mind.
Ew, what?
And it's like, oh, okay, like, got it. You're definitely a creep.
Ew. Why would you think that's, like, socially acceptable at all?
Yeah. Also, it's kind of weird that he's like, I've heard so much about you. And then he reacts that way. I'd be like, is my boyfriend telling you stuff about, like, our per- – that's where my mind would go.
Right. Like, what are you hearing about me that that's your reaction?
Yeah.
Weird.
But Iris moves on from that by complimenting his beautiful house, and Josh brings up that he must own a lot of land with how long that driveway is. And he's like, don't tell me you own the entire lake, too. And Sergey's like, no, that would be ridiculous. I just own all of the land around it. And both Josh and Iris are like, oh, shit. Like, this guy's rich.
Mm-hmm.
Sergey asks if either of them want a drink, but Iris really just wants to take a shower first. So she heads upstairs. And we get a little shower montage. And when she gets out, she wipes away the fog on the mirror to look at herself. And she says to herself, smile, act happy. And we cut to her doing just that. Everyone is gathered around at the dinner table telling stories, and she smiles. She's looking very endearingly and locked in on Patrick, who is telling the story of how he and Eli first met. It was at a Halloween party. Patrick was Dracula, and he was checking out the snack table, real, when he felt a tap on his shoulder, and he turned to see this big puffy green dinosaur staring him down.
Oh.
And from inside the costume, he hears a voice say, "You're standing on my tail." And, and Patrick steps off the tail and apologizes right away. And then the dinosaur takes his head off, and Patrick sees Eli for the first time. And it's just love at first sight. Another freaking meet cute.
Are you kidding me with these meet cutes? Like, where are these happening? I would like to go.
What is this town that they're living in? Iris also finds the story very cute. She's just as much of a hopeless romantic, and she relates a lot to that love at first sight feeling. And she's like, yeah, I get it. And it's like, there's this piece of you that you didn't even know was broken. And then suddenly it's fixed and you're staring at this stranger. And you know that for the rest of your life, you will do whatever it takes to make this person happy. And she and Josh lock eyes and they get kind of mushy. But then like everyone around the table agrees with Iris, like in unison, kind of politely, despite the fact that they're clearly a little uncomfortable by her sudden intensity. They're like, okay, damn girl.
Oh.
The small talk picks back up around the table from there, but when Iris glances again at Josh, she seems to see something on his face that makes her feel like she did or said something wrong. And we kind of see her shrink back into herself again, and she doesn't talk much for the rest of that dinner.
Okay, that's weird.
I don't know. It was like the way that moment was shot, where she was talking about how lovely it is to experience love at first sight. Mm-hmm. It was like silence and the camera slowly moving into her face, and she's like lost in her own thoughts, and it is very intense. So I'm like, is Josh literally mad that she just loves him so much and made that clear to everyone? I don't know. Chill.
That was weird.
So Patrick is doing the dishes in the kitchen after dinner and asks Sergey what he does for work. And we're all curious because he's obviously loaded.
I would like to apply.
Yeah, right. And his answer is, oh, you know, I have fingers in many pots. My hands are not clean, my friend. It's very dirty business.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah.
I'm That's good. Why? Just kidding.
Over in the living room, Iris and Kat are sitting next to each other on the couch talking, and they are on opposite ends, like as far away as they can be from each other on this
Dude,
couch.
It's so awkward. I can't get over this. I'm uncomfortable.
And Iris is telling Kat that her boyfriend, Sergey, seems nice. And Kat is like, oh yeah, he's got everything you want in a man. He's rich, he's intelligent, he's got a beautiful wife. And Iris is like, wait, like back up, what? He's married, but you guys love each other. And Kat is like, love? Oh, no. He'd have to think of me as a human being first. I'm an accessory, like his fucking car. I wear what he wants, eat what he wants, fuck when he wants.
No. Okay. Hold on. What just happened?
Yeah.
What?
It's like, okay, then why are you with him? Is it just for the money?
Wait, is he like, does he like practice polygamy, or is this like the wife doesn't know kind of vibes, you know?
Yeah, we don't get an answer there, but I'm guessing the wife doesn't know based on.
Oh, ew.
Yeah, maybe that's what the lake house is for, you know?
Ew, ew, this is awful. I hate it. No.
Yeah.
Gross.
So Iris is sitting there trying to process that. Our little hopeless romantic is like, when Kat kind of snaps out of it and laughs to herself, saying, well, look who I'm talking to. And of course, Iris is offended by that.
Yeah, like,
and
what she do you
just,
mean?
Exactly. And she just comes right out and says, do you not like me, Kat? And Kat's honest and says, it's not that I don't like you, Iris. It's the idea of you. You make me feel so replaceable.
Jealousy?
Yeah, it's like jealousy. I don't know. Iris is like very put together. Like, I don't know. She's very polite. She's like a headband girl. And you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, I do.
Iris is shocked by that and like comforts Kat, saying that she could never be replaceable and that she actually wishes that she could be more like her. And she admires Kat's fearlessness and that it feels like something inside of her is always like holding her back. Like, I don't know, anxiety of some sort.
Yeah.
Later into the night, the whole group congregates together in the living area. Eli pulls some music out. Dancing begins. Everyone is closer to drunk than tipsy at this point, and we're having a good time. Until Iris is dancing with Sergey, and she sees that Josh and Kat are dancing kind of intimately, and Kat keeps whispering in his ear. It's messy. Oh. It's messy at this lake house. So she's getting insecure to the point where she dances on over to them and steals Josh away.
Yeah, girl.
And he looks surprised by her boldness, but also he seems to really appreciate it. Okay. And so they're both smiling and like dancing together now. And then we cut to the disturbing image of Josh climaxing on top of Iris in bed together that night.
Oh, good. Good for them.
He collapses next to her and then just immediately rolls over, turns out his bedside lamp, and he is ready to go to sleep.
Oh, okay. Good night, I guess.
Yeah, no words spoken. Mm. And Iris is still just laying there looking kind of uncomfortable with like the abrupt end to that. So she tries to be all cutesy and romantic and is like, I'm so glad we did this. Being here with you is just perfect. And he grunts like a half-hearted uh-huh at her.
Bro, no. I don't like that.
And she continues, I'm sorry if I was being weird or mopey earlier. I just want you to be happy, Josh. That's all. And he's clearly not interested in like getting into this conversation or just anything that she has to say because he's just like, Iris, go to sleep. And so she just goes to sleep. Like he's not going to talk.
No, I don't like that.
The next morning, Josh is in the adjoining bathroom to their bedroom brushing his teeth and Iris is out on the bedroom balcony soaking up the sun. When she comes back inside, she tells Josh how nice it is outside. And he asks her, what's the weather? And she responds, it's currently 72 degrees with an 83% chance of rain in the evening.
And very specific.
Josh chuckles and goes like, it never gets old. And Iris laughs too to herself. It's like there's some inside joke that we're not in on. But apparently as of the day before, Josh had wanted to get up this morning nice and early and spend some time down at the lake. But now after how last night went, he's got a hangover and he tells Iris that he'd rather just take it slow with a long shower and lots of coffee. But he can tell that she was excited about spending time outside, so he encourages her to go down like to the lake on her own. So she's like, okay, fine, like I'd rather go with you and I hope I don't run into anyone who hates me.
Yeah.
I'll go, I guess. And as soon as she's out of the room, Josh grabs his phone and this little like mini USB that pairs with it. And he plugs it into the phone and he starts sliding and tapping his finger on the phone, but we can't see what he's doing.
Okay.
Meanwhile, Iris has made her way down to the lake and she takes her shoes off. She's wearing this cute blouse and plaid shorts fit and she feels something in her shorts, like in the pocket. Something that she doesn't expect to be there. So she pulls it out and it's a switchblade. And she's like looking down at it, confused, when we see Sergey walking down the path and into the sand and he takes a seat at one of the lake chairs and he greets her. So she quickly stuffs the knife back in her pocket before turning to say hi. He's got a whole ass bottle of vodka on like the little table next to him. And the small talk ensues. He, of course, has to make it weird by saying, nice view, while staring directly at her instead of the
Ew.
Lake.
Oh, my. Why is it? Okay, the vibes. The vibes are bad.
And then he lifts his glass of vodka, cheersing to love before knocking it back.
Yeah, love. He knows a lot about love for sure.
He's also a hopeless romantic. Can you not tell?
Oh, yeah.
He tries to offer her some vodka as well, but she puts her shoes back on and says that she's actually going to just head back inside. And she insists that she wants to just check on Josh because he wasn't feeling well, but Sergey manages to guilt her into staying with him to keep him company since she's enjoying his lake house so much.
Oh, not the guilt.
Yeah. So she takes a seat in the other lounge chair next to him, and he pulls out a little bottle of sunscreen. And of course, he asks her to apply it on his back and shoulders for him.
Okay.
And when she makes it to his shoulders, he grabs one of her hands in his own and won't let go. And he just looks up at her and smiles. And she's freaked out and asks him what he's doing. And Sergey goes, it's not a problem. This is Kat's idea.
Wait, what?
Yeah, why is Kat? I mean, she's okay with him having a wife, I guess. So.
Yeah, Kat, like, I can see why, whatever, like, Kat, but. just the, why? Leave her alone. Like, she's got a boyfriend.
Okay, Kat thinks it's a great idea. What about me?
Yeah, like, I should have a say on this? No, maybe?
Yeah, so obviously that comment does not comfort Iris, and he stands up and gets a little more up in her face, and she asks him to let go of her hand, but he doesn't, and instead he says, this is what you do, yes? This is what you're for.
What, and you're for?
Yeah.
What you're for?
His hand is on her waist. He's pulling her in tighter to him, and she's telling him to please stop, but he starts kissing along her neck.
Ew. Oh, oh, God.
We then cut to the friend group all gathered together in the living room up at the house, and they're like reminiscing about how great of a time they all had last night, when suddenly Iris comes walking into the living room holding the switchblade at her side completely covered in blood.
No.
Eli is the first to notice her and is obviously like, what the fuck? And Iris like has this shell-shocked look in her wide eyes, like trembling slightly. And she says, I didn't mean to. He forced himself on me.
Oh my God.
And everyone, like, as, I guess as, like, as a friend who's just like part of the weekend, your friend's girlfriend comes in like this and is like, guys, I just killed Sergey.
Yeah.
Like, what's your reaction to that? Because obviously, he tried to take advantage of her, but also it's like, okay, you just murdered someone.
Yeah, no, I think I would be scared of her. I mean,
you would.
I would be scared because it seems like she snapped. Like, I don't know what they're, it's like, I don't know how much, it depends on how much I know about Sergey and like what kind of person he is. Like, if she comes in and is like, he wouldn't stop touching me, it's like, if I know that that's his thing, I'm like, ooh. Well, long time coming, I guess. But I don't know. Murder is never something I'm going to be like, yeah, chill. Let's go. Let's go. Chilling.
Yeah, especially when that's a good point. Like, what is your relationship with Sergey? And also, this is like their first time meeting Iris.
Exactly. They don't know her.
Everyone's like trying to catch up with this sight in front of them. And Josh is like, oh my God, Sergey. And when Kat realizes, she goes running out of the house to check on him.
Yeah.
And Josh grabs Iris and is trying to stay level-headed, asking her to just talk him through exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. And she says, I didn't have a choice. He wouldn't let go. He was choking me, Josh. He was trying to kill me. And the only thing I could think about is if he did kill me, I'd never get to see you again. And that hurt so much more than the pain of being choked. I wouldn't let that happen. I love you so much.
Whoa. All right. A lot of things just went through my head.
Okay.
First of all, I didn't realize he was trying to kill her.
Yes. And we do see like flashbacks during this to like corroborate her story. Like, she rejected him, and so he got violence.
Oh, see, I assumed it was more like she just, like, he was like kissing her and she did this. Mm-hmm. But like, okay, 100%. All right, that's crazy. But then also, I'm coming back to the switchblade in her pocket, like, and her not knowing it was there, and now it was there, and it came in handy, which is really interesting.
Very weird. So Girlie keeps spiraling and spiraling until Josh says to her, Iris, go to sleep. And her eyes glaze over into like a pure white. Fade to black.
Wait, what? Wait, what do you mean? What?
Yep.
Huh?
Josh tells her to go to sleep.
Yeah.
Her eyes completely white out.
Josh tells Iris to go to sleep in her eyes. Okay.
Have you never experienced that?
No, I don't think I have, nor have I ever seen it. Like, okay, this took a turn and a half.
Uh-huh. We're about to get into the sci-fi element of the movie now.
Ah, I forgot about the sci-fi thing.
Yes, I hoped you would.
Yeah, right?
So, when we come back into focus, Patrick and Josh are tying Iris up to a chair with some rope.
Good.
And Patrick is asking Josh, are you sure this is going to hold? And Josh is sure, saying, yeah, it's fine. She's not superhuman or anything. She's only as strong as they want her to be. So Eli comes into the room then, informing Josh that Kat is okay, and she's currently zonked out thanks to two Xanaxes.
Oh.
And which she willingly took. It was not, yeah, she's just like trying to chill out right now because her boyfriend just died.
Okay.
And Josh is like, okay, cool. Well, I guess we need to call the cops and like just tell them everything that happened. And Eli agrees, but he's still just confused on how this all could have happened. And he asks
Eli both.
Yes. So Eli asks Josh, don't they have safeguards for this kind of shit? And Josh is like, yeah, I have no idea. It was a glitch, maybe. And neither of them really know, but Eli is going to call the cops outside to give Josh some privacy to say goodbye to Iris now.
Oh my God.
Because obviously, like, she's a safety hazard now and is going to be, they know she's going to be taken away and, like, shut down.
We're going to return her to the store now.
Yes.
Like, oh boy.
To this company that just apparently sells violent bots.
Uh-huh.
When Josh tells her to wake up, she immediately picks up where she left off when she was turned off, like spiraling about what she did and why she had to do it. And she's like, I had to, you have to believe me. And Josh says, oh, I believe you, Iris. I mean, you couldn't lie to me even if you wanted to. It's part of your programming.
Ooh.
And Iris is confused. She has no idea that she's not a real human.
Interesting.
So Josh is like, yeah, there's no delicate way to say this, so I'm going to rip the Band-Aid off right now. You're a robot. More specifically, you're a companion robot. It's like a, well, I hate the word fuckbot because, like, you do so much more than that.
Ooh.
So you're a emotional support robot that fucks.
Ew! Okay. Oh, all right. Hey. What's up? Listen, this is all just... I had no idea any of this was about to happen. And I'm
Which
also
is so
like,
fun.
And I'm also just like coming back to Kat now where I'm like, I kind of get it now.
Yes, I do
now
too.
Now it makes sense.
Oh, and the weird weather moment. What's the weather?
Oh! Whoa, the weather. Okay. Oh, yeah. It's all clicking.
So I did go into the movie knowing that she was a robot.
Okay.
So it was really fun to be able to tell the story without you knowing.
I had no idea.
I wonder if you would have like caught on earlier with the visuals. I did leave little things out here and there to hopefully get you.
I'm glad you did. Yeah. I've done the same thing. So like, yeah.
Iris is still in disbelief. So in the middle of her asking him if this is like some sick joke, he asks her what the weather is, and she cuts herself off and gives him the statistical answer again.
Oh my gosh.
And she looks really freaked out with herself when she does this, like coming around to the fact that this isn't a joke. He then asks her if she can speak any foreign languages. And she's like, no, you know, I only speak English. Like, what kind of question is that? But then on his phone, he presses a button in his settings and she's suddenly speaking fluent Spanish.
Oh.
So after pulling a couple different stunts like this, she does finally come around to the truth that she is a robot. So we're going to take a little break here to do our first survivability check-in. We're going to be doing things a little bit differently going forward with how we score our survivability, because I feel like at some points in the movie we're like, well, obviously I wouldn't do this. So does that mean I survive the whole rest of the movie? No. We have to like split it into chunks. So we're going to try to do like a first act, second act, third act, and then put them all together in an average at the end. This is a really weird movie to do that for the first time. I am going to say that we are Iris when thinking about what our survivability is. The whole robot situation is going to be make it harder to do this. But I mean, for me, I'm 100% right now.
Right, because we're alive, so...
Yeah.
100.
The only thing that... I mean, obviously we had Sergei as a threat, but it's hard because we're a robot, so, like, we're stronger, maybe, than a human. So that's going to make survivability interesting in that regard. I don't know. What do you feel for, like, your first one here, and how do you want to base it?
I think it's tricky. Because you just said, like, I kind of want to say 100, but also bringing in Sergei, it's like, I mean, you can break electronics, you know, like, so maybe I put myself at a modest, like, 92.
Okay. 192. We're starting strong.
Let's go.
So like I was saying, Iris is accepting that she's a robot, but she's confused about all of the memories that she has, like them meeting for the first time at the grocery store.
Wait. Oh my God. I'm losing it. My My brain is breaking. My brain is breaking. Okay, let's go.
And he's like, yeah, all of those are fake memories implanted into your hard drive to make you seem more real. And the way you remember us meeting is just something that I picked from a list of different meet cute options.
Well, that explains all of it, doesn't it? There right. we go. It wasn't real. That's love is dead, everybody.
Because of course it isn't real. Like, come on.
Exactly.
In the ripe year of 2025, I don't think so.
Not a chance.
And this has got to be even like more, it's probably not 2025. There's no year for this, but everything's very futuristic.
Oh, so do we think it's in the future?
I would assume because obviously we don't, I mean, I don't know what you would call this because technology is very advanced in this just because obviously with this robot and it's just something that people buy. But other than that, like the set design isn't like super futuristic or anything.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then he tells her the real story of how they first met. And we cut to the real flashback. Josh gets a knock at his door and a couple guys are on the other side in uniforms with a gigantic human-sized box labeled Empathics Robotics. They roll her in along with a wardrobe for her, and he signs a user agreement, and they explain that once she's done syncing with his phone, he'll need to create a love link, and it establishes the emotional connection between him and Iris. All you have to do is follow the vocal prompts once she wakes up. They explain that she's also very customizable. You can change her voice, her eye color, her intelligence. And if you ever want to revert her back to her factory settings, there's a thumbprint sensor behind her right ear. So Josh is a little shocked that he can change her intelligence levels. But this empathics guy is like, oh, don't worry about it. There are like about a billion different government regulations that force us to limit how strong and smart they can be. She can't lie. So if you ask her a question, she literally has to tell you the truth. Mm. So because I don't know if it's possible, like if a robot accesses their settings and is like, oop, bump that up, you know. Then you can just ask them, like, do you know you're a robot? Did you mess with the settings? And they have to, like, there's no way around them having to answer that. So the guys all leave and Josh has her synced up to his phone. It's time to establish the love link, which kind of works like Face ID. He has to be within 3 feet of her vision to be scanned and then state his name. And from there, she's in love. So...
wow.
All she remembers next is running into him at the grocery store because that's what he picked out. But in reality, he immediately takes her to his bedroom and has sex with her.
Oh. Hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. I love this. This actually, have you ever watched Black Mirror?
Oh, yes. I haven't watched the new season. I'm so excited. But yeah, this is giving Black Mirror.
There's an episode in like season one that's it's not quite like this, but it's about like essentially sex robots. And it's just like reminding me of that.
A sex robot is so scary because I'm afraid that it's a very possible thing for the future.
Yes. I mean, unfortunately, 100%.
I think it's probably already invented, but like in this way where it's so easy to just like, $2,000 to rent for like 2 months. Like, I feel like that is going to happen someday and it's disgusting and I'm scared.
I don't like it.
Because like some some technology stuff is like so over older generations' heads that they're like, I don't care about that. That's crazy. I don't need that. What is that? You're too reliant. But then obviously us like growing up, it's like, well, social media apps are just normal. And for our generations, it's totally normal. And I feel like it's just going to keep growing and growing and people are going to be more desensitized. And one day there's like not even going to be an ethical discussion about this. It's just going to be normal. And I'm terrified. Yeah. I hope I'm gone by then.
Me too, girl. Get me out. Get me out.
Back in real time, Iris is crashing out. And she's being told that none of her memories are real. Her emotions are just programming. Even her tears are from a water reservoir in her system that gets filled up when he takes her in for service appointments.
I don't like this. I really don't.
And Iris says, okay, I'm not real. But I'm still yours. We can get through this. Let's go back home and I'll do whatever you want.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that love link is basically, you know, total brainwash. Mm-hmm. But Josh says no. And that is when Kat enters the room and she's pissed and she goes, what the fuck are you waiting for? Shut her down already. Iris starts freaking out at that idea and Josh is like, okay, I'll be right back. He takes Kat into the next room over to talk to her, telling her that she can't say stuff like that in front of a robot. But he really cares about the robot's feelings, you know?
Yeah.
But Kat doesn't care and she goes, well, okay, I don't like surprises, Josh. This wasn't part of the plan. Josh knows.
Okay. Did somebody put that freaking switchblade in her pocket?
It seems it was planted.
It does seem like it was planted. The guy was rich, dude.
Yep.
Oh, no.
So Josh knows and he apologizes, but he just felt like after everything Iris has done for them that he owed her an explanation. And then he admits that he also just really wants to say goodbye because he's going to miss her.
Oh, yeah, he's going to miss the robot. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Kat has zero empathy, and she's like, are you fucking serious? She's a piece of plastic that you have sex with. And Josh recoils at the way that she puts that, like, reacting, like, the idea of that is just so disgusting. Well, you're doing it.
That is what you're doing, buddy.
And he veers their conversation back to the situation at hand. He says, the plan hasn't changed. I'm just adding one tiny extra step, a final farewell, and then I will switch all of her settings back to normal. And then, yeah, I'll shut her down permanently. And Kat asks, and then? And I personally have a feeling that she's hoping that he'll say, then we can be together.
Oh.
That energy is there. But instead, he says, then nothing. We'll open up a bottle of champagne and wait for the cops to show up. The hard part is over, which, by the way, holy fucking shit, right? You plan and you plan and you plan and you know it's going to happen, but then, like, it happens. We did it.
Ooh, good job. Oh, so my God. Crazy.
He hugs her and she reluctantly hugs him back. So, like, he's confused and he's just like, why are you not as excited as me? And Kat says that it's just the Xanax that Eli gave her. And he's like, whoa, you actually took it? And she's like, it's a Xanax, Josh. I'm not going to not take it. So she was offered a Xanax by Eli. And when Eli told him that she was lying down taking some Xanaxes, he didn't believe that she actually did it. So it seems like it's just him and Kat that are in on this plan.
Oh, okay.
So anyways, Josh heads back to Iris in the living room and he's like, hey, beep boop. I'm so sorry about that.
Oh my God, wait, beep boop.
Yes.
Beep boop. Sorry, I'm back. Okay.
This is so fun. I'm so happy I wasn't too obvious because I went there a couple times. I was like, please don't pick up on it.
No, I was like, why would I think she's a robot?
Yeah.
No.
So, except beep boop is on the floor, still tied to that chair. But while Josh and Kat were gone talking, she had spotted the switchblade on the floor. Mm. So she managed to scoot over to it. And just as Josh walks up to her, we hear the blade slice through the ropes around her wrists and she punches Josh in the throat.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
He falls to the ground gasping for breath as she lets her ankles free and stands up and she apologizes to Josh, grabs the tablet or like his phone, which looks like it's like folds like a weird tablet. It took me a while to realize that was literally his phone because it just looks weird. But she knows that like he was controlling her from that. So she takes that and then she starts to leave. But Kat comes out from down the hall and just like stands there in shock, seeing Iris like just up and about. And Iris tells her to get Josh an ice pack and then she heads right out the front door.
Oh, okay.
Out in the front yard, Eli and Patrick are sitting together at a picnic table, and Eli's on the phone, and he's telling someone, yeah, she's all tied up. She's not getting anywhere. But then Patrick, like, sees Iris just walk right out the front door and run off into the woods, and he's, like, trying to tell Eli, but Eli's like, sweetie, I'm on the phone. Like, don't bother me.
No.
So then we cut to Josh, Kat, and Eli all sitting together outside at one of those tables, and Josh sets the phone USB drive thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, he sets that in front of Eli, and Eli is like, what is this? And Josh tells him that it's a mod for Iris.
A mod?
It gives him access to parts of her programming that people aren't typically supposed to have access to. So Eli goes, I'm sorry, did you jailbreak your sex bot? What did you do to her?
Yeah, okay.
Josh answers, I bumped up her aggression and her self-defense functions.
Ooh.
and I turned off the programming that prevents her from doing harm. But she just escaped before I had the chance to reset her. So if Empathics finds her before we do, then they'll know that she was tampered with and then we're fucked.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow. All right.
So Eli validly starts freaking out because this is fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
But Josh is like, no, listen, like Sergei was a bad dude. He was mixed up in drugs and guns and like human trafficking or something. And Kat goes, and not to mention a terrible boyfriend. And Josh piggybacks that and is like, yeah, like he was just the worst. Come on. That's not good enough for Eli because he has his head screwed on just a little bit tighter than Josh does.
Yeah, I would hope so.
We need someone. And he's like, why did you do this? And we cut to a portrait hanging in one of the many fancy lake house rooms. Kat pulls it open, revealing a hidden safe in the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And that hidden safe contains about $12 million.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Doesn't it?
And a gun, like a pistol.
Oh, okay, cool.
So Eli sees this and he's like, oh, yeah, valid, I get it.
I get it. Okay, you know what? Valid.
However, one thing he doesn't get is if this whole trip was a setup to get Iris to kill Sergei, why were he and Patrick even invited?
Alibi?
And Josh explains it, that it was for them to corroborate their story.
Okay, yeah.
Because they figured it would be an easier sell with more witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
But with how everything has gone down now, they really need Eli's help. And Josh tells him that he's willing to give him a cut of the money. It'll be an even three-way split between Josh, Kat, and Eli.
Wait, what happened to Patrick?
Exactly. Patrick is in the room with them, just like standing to the side. And so yeah. Eli is clearly like the core friend, like Kat, Eli, Josh are like the core friend group. And then Patrick's the boyfriend. But Eli, Eli's like, don't you mean a four-way split? Patrick's just standing there and Josh stands by it and is like, no, absolutely not. A three-way split. And Eli's like, well, okay, what about Patrick? And Josh rolls his eyes. And it's like, you must be joking. Patrick doesn't count.
Patrick doesn't count, but you're asking him to lie for you still.
Rude. And Eli gasps and immediately goes to console Patrick, saying he's so sorry he had to hear that. And then he says, Patrick, go to sleep.
No. No way, dude. No way. I can't. I'm done. I'm out.
You get a robot.
Everybody gets a robot. That's crazy.
And Patrick's eyes glaze over into that complete white as he is turned off.
Oh my God.
And Eli starts yelling at Josh. He's like, what the fuck, dude? Are you trying to sabotage my relationship? And Josh is like, no, man, I know how much Patrick means to you. God knows you could have traded him in for a newer model a fuckload of times. And Eli takes offense to that and is like, are you fucking robo-shaming me? And they keep arguing and arguing. And Kat is just sitting on the couch, like borderline bored at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Josh is yelling at Eli that he's lucky that he's even getting a cut because he has yet to do jack shit. And Eli is like, yeah, and what have you done? Iris did everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh goes, I planted the knife in her pocket. I had to like practice that. And
yeah, it must have been really hard.
It's really hard work. Like, I deserve the $4 million.
Uh-huh.
The fighting keeps spiraling, and Kat decides to break it up. She's like, okay. She walks up to Eli, and she puts her hands on his shoulders, rubbing them a little, trying to calm him down. And she goes, we are offering you $4 million, and all you have to do is help us find one little robot girl in the woods. So after staring at the money a little longer, Eli agrees on one condition. He calls dibs on the gun, which he insists they are definitely going to need since Iris took Josh's phone and she knows his passcode. Then he walks over to Patrick, tells him to wake up, and informs him, waving the gun in his face, hey baby, we're gonna go robot hunting. And Patrick's like, oh sweet, okay. And
Oh my god.
We cut to Iris sitting in the middle of the woods barefoot, and she's looking at Josh's phone. She's checking out all the different settings connected to her. And she turns off voice commands. Very smart.
Okay, yep.
Then changes her eye color from like blue to red and back to blue. She messes around with like the pitch of her voice and is kind of having a good time with it. She just like is kind of giggling, thinks it's funny.
Yeah.
But she just puts that back to normal, everything back to normal. In the advanced settings, though, she sees that her intelligence is set to 40%. So, of course, she decides to turn that baby all the way up to 100.
I mean, I probably would too. Let's be real.
We cut to a different sector of the woods where Josh, Kat, Eli, and Patrick are. And Josh has the bright idea that they split up so that they can go and close in on her from two different sides. So him and Kat will go one way and then Patrick and Eli another. And Eli is immediately like, oh my God, are you and Kat fucking? Which like, as the audience, we're also trying to figure that out. It's not clear. But I'm pretty sure they're both like, ew, gross. Absolutely not. Disgusting. And so it's like, still not clear. I don't know what's going on with them.
Right.
Back to Iris. She's standing up on a rock looking out over this more mountainous range of the woods, and she's running scenarios through her head trying to think through what her best way to escape would be. Mm-hmm. What are you thinking in this moment? Best way to escape the situation?
Now that I know I'm a robot, like I'm trying to like imagine how you feel like you can like just live on, because like what is your identity? Can you just live without a human? Like, is that possible? I don't know. But either way, I mean, I'm just gonna keep heading straight in a direction until I find civilization, I think. Okay. And then my goal would be to like not change my identity, but like, you know, disguise myself, I guess, is what I'm looking for.
Yes.
And try to fit in.
So she thinks about hitchhiking, but knows that because she's covered in blood right now, people would probably be freaked out and just like speed up instead of pull over for her. Also, walking on foot all the way back home could take days because they're like very, very remote area. And Josh would most likely be way ahead of her. So, like, by the time she makes it home, if she walks, he's probably just going to be waiting with, like, a gun.
Right. Yeah.
And she'll be dead. But then she realizes something. She has Josh's phone, and it doesn't only control her. It also controls Josh's car.
Oh.
So, her plan is to backtrack through the woods, avoid Josh and everybody else, make it back to the car, and drive on out of there.
Okay. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah. I think definitely best chance.
Yeah, I would be a little worried about like running into that, like if somebody stayed at the house. But yes. Maybe in the middle of the night, that's when I would like try and take the car.
Oh, that would be smart. Like just stay hidden till. Although then, well, I was gonna say then you have to chance them leaving and you're stranded. But I don't think they would because she's such a liability.
Right. True.
She starts to make her way back when she sees Eli and Patrick walking in the distance. So she quickly hides behind a tree and she eavesdrops on their conversation. Eli's pissed about this whole thing and is like, honestly, let's just walk around so like we can take our cut, but Josh and Kat can do all the work. Like, this is annoying. Patrick asks if he's mad that they left him out of the plan, which he is, and he's basically like, ugh, if you were a robot and I was plotting to make you kill someone, I would have included them, but obviously like you're not a robot, so like, whatever.
Oh my God.
And Patrick has this weird look on his face. Like he's a little disappointed and annoyed, but he just nods and agrees. And Eli moves on from that and is like, anyways, I'm hungry and tired and carrying this gun makes me really horny. So how about we go back to the cabin and we fuck and then you can make me an omelet.
These people are crazy.
Okay, so out of touch. It's wild.
Yeah.
And he gives Patrick a peck on the lips and starts walking away. But Patrick doesn't follow him. So Eli turns around. Obviously, something's wrong. And Patrick asks, you wouldn't do that though, right? You wouldn't alter my programming? And Eli's just like, huh? What are you talking about? And Patrick tells him, I know I'm a robot. And Eli's shocked, but apparently they've been together for so long, much longer than the average robot relationship.
It's the average robot relationship.
Crazy, crazy phrase. That he's had the time to like put the pieces together and figure it out. So Eli promises him that he would never treat him the way that Josh treats Iris, and of course would never alter his programming. And Patrick believes him. And honestly, I believe him too, but like it's a bare minimum type of thing. So like I believe that he's not on the level that Patrick is. Like he wouldn't mess with his settings like that, use him like that. But also you just said, let's go fuck and then you can make me an omelet. And it's like, okay, you still, there's a level there of like uncomfortable power and I'm above you and exactly. I'm using you type of thing. So don't exactly, act yeah. like so high and mighty that you're better than Josh.
Yeah, no, absolutely not.
Anyways, they have this really intense back and forth about how much they love each other. And Eli asks him what it feels like for Patrick. Like, he wants so badly for the love that Patrick feels to be real, I think. Mm. And Patrick describes it as pain that feels angry, violent, and bright.
Whoa.
It's giving red Taylor Swift.
Yes. yes, it is.
They're both crying and they start making out. And that's when they both hear a phone buzzing a couple yards away. Iris is scrambling to make it stop.
Oh, no.
But it's too late. Eli cocks the gun and calls out for Iris. And she decides there's nothing left to do but run.
Yeah.
So she's off. Eli takes a shot at her, but he hits a tree and then immediately lowers the gun and screams, ow. And covers his ears because of how loud the boom was.
Bro.
Dude has no idea what he's doing. I'm shocked he managed to fire it in the first place.
Yeah.
But the gunshot alarms Josh and Kat. So they start running toward the sound.
Mm-hmm.
Iris is still running away as fast as she can. But now Patrick is running after her. And we think he is going to be a problem. But then Eli jumps out of nowhere. And full send, both of them go tumbling down a ravine.
Oh.
They both struggle to get back up again once they hit the bottom, but Iris manages to first, and they both see the gun lying in the dirt between them.
Oh.
So they both lunge. And Eli goes, this isn't personal, Iris. You know I'm an ally, girly. They both have their hands on the gun, like fighting for keeps, and Eli gets on top of her while they're wrestling, yeah. and the gun goes off.
Oh, boy.
And we see that the bullet shot through Eli's back. From Ooh. Like a top, the camera's like top angle looking down at them.
Yeah.
And the blood starts spurting out of Eli's back.
Ooh.
And his dead body falls limply on top of Iris.
Oh, and shit.
Yeah. Iris scrambles out from underneath him. And we hear Patrick yell for Eli. He's standing up at the top of the ravine and looking down and seeing all this. And Iris calls up to him like, Patrick, I'm sorry. I wonder if she can help it. Like, if she wanted to kill him, because her self-defense stuff is kicked up, her, like, aggression is kicked up so right. much that it's hard to tell, like, what she's doing to survive versus what her programming is doing to survive. But then also at the same time, everything is her programming.
Exactly. Does she have any choice, really, is the question.
Yeah.
Like, this gets into, like, crazy, like... morals and ethics and like what mm-hmm. are what level of consciousness do they have beyond programming?
Yeah like, because do you have empathy for her?
It's like you do probably because of how close to human she is. Yes, yeah. But if this robot didn't look human, I would mm-hmm. say the empathy would go down. And is that mm-hmm. right? Probably not. But
if it was a really cute robot-y robot, I'd also be like, aw.
Yeah, no,
you know
same.
What I mean?
Same.
Which versus, is probably
like,
bad.
Machinery. Like, I hate to say this, but like, look at my cell phone. If my cell phone had that much consciousness,
uh-huh.
I don't think I would like feel bad. Like when I talk to Siri, I don't feel bad for Siri. Like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
That's like that's really interesting.
It's so weird because her emotions and how she's reacting to everything that's being done to her is valid. And it's mm-hmm. how like a real human would react.
Yes.
And so it's like, yeah, and Josh is human. So everything that's happening is because of a human's greed and just like possible sociopathy.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I feel bad that she's the victim of that. But also, could we change her settings and she's just happy about everything? But also, mm-hmm. is that wrong? Because what does she want? Does she have enough consciousness to want her settings set a certain way to feel the most herself?
Yeah, right.
It's like, oh, it's all so weird.
That's like such a complex, I could talk about that for hours. That's such yeah. a complex issue.
So Iris does like feel bad about what happened. I don't know if it's because she felt like she had to, because otherwise it was kill or be killed in that moment.
Yeah,
or if
yeah.
she wished she didn't have to at all, but she apologizes to Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when Kat and Josh run up from behind Patrick and join in on the party. So of course, Iris starts running again.
Yeah.
Josh is hot on her tail. It's a race back to the car, and Iris makes it first.
Okay.
But Josh is literally right behind her, so when she opens the driver's door and gets in, she goes to close it as fast as possible, and it crunches on Josh's hand.
Ooh, yikes.
Obviously, he pulls back and she's able to close the door and lock herself in.
Oh my God, go girly. See, I'm rooting for her. I'm rooting for her. This is so, but like, that's because they're clearly in the wrong. Whether or not she's a robot, they are in the wrong. So it's I feel like that makes it easier.
Rooting against evil at this
point. Yeah, I feel like that's what it is. Oh my God, this, I'm so intrigued.
So this is a very, like I said, fancy futuristic car with like a built-in type of Siri. So the voice comes through the speakers and is like, good afternoon, where would you like to go today? It's also like a self-driving car.
Yeah, okay, okay.
And Iris immediately says home, but the voice responds, voice ID not recognized.
Oh no.
Yeah, it needs Josh's voice, and Josh sees her struggling and realizing that from the outside, and he slowly knocks on the window and just says to her, Iris, you're not going anywhere.
Oh my God, ew, creepy.
But Iris has an idea. She can change her tone of voice through the phone settings. So she starts scrambling, trying a bunch of different voices, like different pitches, telling this car to drive home. And Josh realizes what she's doing and starts to panic. So he runs and grabs a rock and starts smashing it into the car window, like trying to break in.
Yeah, crazy.
It takes Iris a good 10 to 15 tries, but eventually she finds just the right pitch for the car to listen to her command, and the car starts to back out of the driveway, its front wheel crushing Josh's foot in the process.
Sucks to suck, bro.
And she's off. She's down the driveway.
Wow. Okay, let's go. Here we go.
And we are at our second survivability check-in.
Ooh, okay. This one's much more interesting. I'm in physical altercations, which I'm not going to be as good at. Firing a gun, as we've talked about in the past, easier than like a knife.
Yep.
I'm not sure I'm going to figure out the voice thing as easily as she did, more or less. I'm going to go with like a 68.
Okay, so I said 72.
I almost said 72, and then I was like, I said 92 before. Let's switch up the second number.
I think the same way. Like, it feels right, but it also, it's like, I just can't do that.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Okay, perfect. This is interesting that we're, like, on the same-ish page.
Yeah, we are.
As we go. Josh limps back into the house, desperate for a phone. They have Sergei's, and it was left in the room with all, like, the money with the painting situation. Mm-hmm. So he goes and grabs Sergei's phone, but of course, it has a passcode. And for some reason, he knows that it must be Stalin's birthday, but he can't remember what Stalin's birthday is.
What? So,
this movie's fucking weird.
It's so weird.
It gets so camp. But thankfully, there are about 50 different books about Stalin on the shelves of this room. So he grabs one of them and he manages to unlock the phone with the birthday.
Perfect.
Back with Iris, she's cruising down a main road now when the car starts beeping and flashing red on the dashboard. So she's like, oh shit, like what now? Mm-hmm. And the car voice says, warning, this car has been reported as stolen. Remote kill switch engaged.
Uh-oh, remote kill? What is, oh, like kill the car.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm like, wait, who's getting killed right now? Like,
just what do you mean the car? And she's screaming at it not to stop, like not to kill switch.
Yeah.
But the car pulls itself over on the side of the road and it turns off. And it also stays locked. So she's like now locked in this car.
Oh.
And then a call starts coming through on Josh's phone from an unknown number, presumably Josh from Sergei's phone.
Right.
She answers. And the first thing Josh says is, hey, beep boop. And
nope. Nope.
And he goes into this whole monologue about how much he still loves her and they can make this work and he'll blame it all on Patrick. And then he'll be a better boyfriend and give her the respect that she deserves.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that's true, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. And she tells him that she does still love him. Like, it's hard for her to hear all of this, but she's like, no, we're not going to work. You programmed me to kill someone that's kind of hard to come back from. Mm-hmm. And she says, we're on different paths now. And he gets pissed when he hears that, kind of shocked. And he's like, wait, what the fuck? Are you breaking up with me right now? And she apologizes and gives him the, it's not you, it's me line. And then she hangs up. Cut back into the woods. Josh manages to make it back to his friends. And it's like a super fucked up sight to see. Patrick is just sitting on the ground, cradling Eli's dead body in his lap. And then Kat is sitting like 10 feet away, just looking defeated and depressed.
Yeah.
But when Josh makes it back to them, he doesn't give a shit. He's on a mission. He tells Patrick that he needs to get up because he needs him to track Iris down for him.
Oof.
And Josh starts digging through Eli's little fanny pack that is still attached to his dead body and digs mm-hmm. out his phone and then uses the face ID of Eli's dead body, face, to unlock it.
Ew.
And Kat sees how fucked up everything is and asks him what he's doing. And he just says that he's taking care of it.
Oh my God, I hate him so much. Like, yeah. It's not just like, yes, he's just like psycho, but mm-hmm. also like, it's just, I don't know. Obviously, I can't explain it, but it's like, he's also just a terrible person in terms mm-hmm. of like his emotions. And it's like everything about him, I can't.
Whoa. Zero respect.
Zero.
In Patrick's settings, he turns his aggression up to 100%.
Oh boy.
And then orders him to go find Iris, get his phone back. He tells him the passcode and tells him to use his phone to put Iris to sleep and then bring her back here and not let anyone get in his way.
Whoa.
So Patrick is still just sitting on the forest floor through all of this, completely in shock over Eli's death. Like, he seems numb. So Josh takes Eli's thumb and places it at the reset pressure point behind Patrick's ear.
Oh.
And Patrick resets, and Josh establishes a love link between the two of them, himself and Patrick.
Yeah.
We see a planted memory of Patrick at the Halloween party as Dracula, but this time it's Josh underneath the dinosaur costume.
Oh my God.
And now that that's established, when Patrick reorients himself back in the present, he's now in love with Josh and will do anything for him, so he sets off to find Iris.
Jeez.
Meanwhile, Iris is still trapped in that car on the side of the road, and she's kicking against the window that Josh was smashing with the rock earlier. So there's mm-hmm. There's like those cracks already.
Yeah.
And she is so close to shattering it. And that is when a cop car comes driving by.
Oh no.
He sees her kicking against that window and then successfully popping it out and climbing through.
Oh.
And she's still bloody and barefoot.
Oh boy.
And now he's obviously pulling up right behind her, this whole situation. She's freaking out. She's got Josh's phone in her hands. This isn't looking good. She's messing with a bunch of like the phone settings as this cop is walking up behind her. And once he reaches her and greets her, she turns around with a big smile and says, "Good evening," but it comes out in German.
Oh,
yes. She switched her language setting.
Oh boy.
So this officer is trying to ask her questions, and she's answering them all honestly because she's programmed to.
Right, okay.
But he picks up on very little of what she's saying because of the language barrier. And what he does pick up on, though, is her name, that she's staying at a house around here. And unfortunately, he knows the area very well, and homes are very few and far between. Mm. So when he mentions Sergey, unfortunately, you know, she has to be like, "Yes, I know Sergey."
Yeah.
And he asks what Sergey's up to these days, and she's like, "Oh yeah, he's dead. I stabbed him in the neck with a knife." And of course, the officer doesn't pick up on any of that, but he's yep. like, "Hey, okay, so why don't you hop in my cruiser and I can drive you back to the house?"
Oh, gosh.
But Iris gets really scared at the idea and starts panicking and begging him not to take her back there. So he picks up on her energy and is like, "Wait, is something wrong here?" Which, like, I don't know why he didn't already think that, given.
Yeah, but how do you think we got here?
She just broke out of a car window, is barefoot and covered in blood and dirt. But the impression is that Sergey has a reputation for partying hard. And, like, that's that.
Okay, so he's kind of just like, "Oh, you're with Sergey." Okay, yes. This makes sense. Gotcha. Yeah.
However, the officer looks into the car and sees the bloody knife on the car's console. Mm. And that is when he knows something is very wrong. And he whips out his gun, points it at Iris, and tells her not to move.
Oh, boy.
But down the road in the distance, we see a silhouette start to walk up from behind this officer. It's Patrick. Iris sees him too, and she's trying to warn the officer. She's screaming, pointing behind him, but the officer's too busy now getting her handcuffed against this car.
Sir.
And then it's too late. Patrick makes it up to the officer, knocks the gun out of his hand just as it's turned on him, then proceeds to punch this guy in the face to death.
Ooh. Oh, that's not pretty.
Yeah. The cop falls to the pavement, and Iris is running down the road with both of her wrists bound by the handcuffs. And Patrick grabs Josh's phone from the car, and after a couple taps, Iris falls to the ground, shut down.
Yikes.
Back at the house, Kat is popping another Zanny.
Good for her.
She's washing it down with some vodka. and Josh is bandaging up his hand. Patrick pulls up in the driveway in the police cruiser.
Oh.
And Kat and Josh meet him out there, freaked out, asking whose car this is. Patrick's like, oh, it's Officer Hendrix's. They're relieved to see that Patrick then pulls Iris out of the trunk and he starts to carry her inside. So they're like, okay, we got Iris. That's great.
That's crazy how easy that was. I was not expecting that to happen.
Yeah. And there's probably a good like 25 minutes left of the movie. It's like, okay. I thought we were just going to like be escaping the whole time.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
So they're like, okay, cool. She's here at least. But they're like, hold on, where is this Officer Hendrix? And Patrick says, oh, he's in the trunk. Kat and Josh share a look. They see Officer Hendrix in the trunk, dead, and they're stressed. Their problem just keeps growing. The story is getting harder and harder to keep together.
Mm-hmm.
So Kat runs in the house and starts throwing stacks of money into her suitcase. And Josh is like, hey, what do you think you're doing? She's like, I'm taking my cut and getting the fuck out of here. It was hard enough justifying Sergei's murder. But now Eli's dead and a random cop. And Josh is like, whoa, okay, back up. What do you mean it was hard justifying Sergei's murder? He was a Russian mobster. He deserved what he got, right? And Kat's like, okay, sure, he deserved what he got. He was a horrible person, a shitty boyfriend, a bad husband, a misogynist. But he wasn't a mobster. He was just a regular dude. He made his fortune in sod farming, which is apparently mass-producing grass turfs. Like on like football fields and stuff.
Yeah. Wait, really?
Yeah. I know.
Are we serious? Dude.
So this is the first that Josh is hearing of this. Yeah. And she's like, yeah, you just assumed that he was in the mob and I didn't correct you.
Oh my God.
And Josh is like, oh, this is a perfect representation of every woman in my fucking life. They use me, and then when shit gets a little tough, they fucking abandon me.
Oh, okay. Yep, this is her. Yep. Blame the women for what you just did, sir.
Yeah. It's like, boo-hoo, Josh. Also, these two are both clearly terrible people.
Yeah, right.
Like, what are you thinking? Anyways, obviously when Kat tries to leave, Josh tells her that she can't leave. And she's like, yeah, fuck off. I'm not your robot. And she keeps heading for the door. So Josh tells Patrick to stop her. And how does Patrick stop her?
Oh, God.
By stabbing her through the back with a kitchen knife.
Oh, Patrick, buddy.
It's like you feel bad because like all of his settings are bumped up to be super aggressive and like cause harm and everything. When that happens, Josh is like, oh, damn, my bad. I didn't think he was going to do that.
Whoops.
And Kat is just begging Josh to shut up for once in his life. Like she kind of laughs to herself a little like, of course, I just got stabbed in the back by this damn robot.
Here we go.
She makes her way over to the couch and she like gets comfortable knowing that she's going to die. She's just going to bleed out now and die.
Oof.
We cut to later that night. Josh is sitting at the head of the dining table and Patrick gets a homemade dinner set right in front of him. So that's so nice of Patrick.
Jeez, that's crazy.
It's just like, because I know off screen that Josh was like, anyways, everyone's dead. Can you make me like some chicken marsala? That sounds really good right now.
Pro has nothing going on in his head except murder right now. It's crazy. Yeah. But we have two robots and a human, right, at this point?
Two robots and a human. Yep. Okay. It's just Josh left with these two robots.
Interesting. Okay.
Iris is seated at the other head of the table, but she hasn't been turned back on yet until Josh says, Iris, wake up. She wakes up and realizes that she's cuffed to this chair and Josh is like, hey, beep boop. And she says something in German. So he fixes that really quick, very apologetic. And then once she has her English back, she's like, fuck you. Okay. So how this dinner goes, first of all, Josh keeps flirting with Patrick in front of her just to piss her off.
What? Like he knows no bounds. Like his evil, his nasty ass personality knows no bounds.
Any angle he can take, he's got it.
Oh my God.
Then he tries to blame everything that has gone down this weekend on Iris, everyone's death, and he mentions Kat. So she's like, whoa, Kat is dead. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even there for that. Everything that happened this weekend is because of your greed.
Yep.
And he gets mad at that. And he's like, no, I'm not greedy. The world is a game and it's rigged against privileged white men like me. He doesn't say privileged white men like me, but he says people like me. And I don't know what else he means by that.
Yeah. Yeah, really, though.
And he's like, you know me better than anyone. So you know I deserve so much better than what I've gotten.
Yeah, you're so, your life is so hard.
So hard. And she agrees. She says, yeah, I do know you better than anyone. I know you love prattling on endlessly about everything the universe owes you. I know that you always need to be in control. I know that you have a below average sized penis. Oop. And I know that you think having a few million dollars will disguise the fact that you're just a sad, bitter, weak human being.
Whoa, get him, girly.
Love. And he scoffs and is like, you're so fucking clever, aren't you? And she's trying not to smile too big, like very pleased with everything that she just said. And he unfortunately humbles her very quickly, saying it's all just programming. And he then adjusts her intelligence from 100 to 0 on his
phone. Zero?
Mm-hmm. And this pretty much just makes her mute.
Yeah.
But side note, like pretty embarrassing for him that she was spitting all those facts at 100% intelligence.
Yeah, right? Sorry, sir. Facts.
Josh decides he wants to test her pain thresholds. So he orders her to point her arm out, like parallel with the dining room table, and he carries the candle that's lit at the table over to her and lets her hand like stay right in the flame and orders her like not to move.
What?
By the way, Patrick is just standing in the kitchen, like watching all of this on standby.
Chilling. Okay, yeah. Cool.
He's like got his break after making dinner and everything.
Yeah.
So Josh's phone starts ringing then. So he's like, oh my God, so sorry. You just wait right there. At this point, like while he's on the phone, Iris's hand completely catches fire. And she's just staring at it in like shock and fear. And they do experience pain. Like this is painful to her.
Ooh.
But she can't defy the order and like help herself.
Wow.
Tears are streaming down her face. Josh had worked himself up with like some breathing exercise to make him sound scared when he answers this phone call. We realize that it's Empathix, the robot company.
Ooh.
He has already called them and reported what happened, presumably that Iris has gone crazy and went on a murderous rampage. And apparently Empathix is on their way. They're 3 minutes away from the house. So
Is he going to, like, try and reset her? Because, like, if she can't lie, she's going to, you know what I mean?
It's too dangerous to just have her be awake and, like, quote, living right now when they're here.
Yeah.
So he's got to do something.
Yeah.
So once he hangs up, he tells Patrick to put the fire that made it now up to Iris's forearm.
Ooh.
Tells him to put that out. So Patrick puts it out with a pitcher of water. And then he apologizes, Josh apologizes to Iris, saying that unfortunately they're going to have to wrap this up a little early. And then he orders Patrick to give Iris the gun. Once she has it, Josh tells her to point it at her own head and pull the trigger.
God.
So Iris fights against the order. He has to say it twice. And on the second time, Iris says no.
Oh.
But then immediately pulls the trigger, like as she's saying no.
Oh.
Yeah, she can't help it. And the bullet shoots through her head and out the other side.
Oh.
Her eyes glaze over white, like nuts and bolts or whatever you want to imagine shoot out onto the floor.
Yeah.
And then Iris herself falls, quote, dead to the floor. Josh walks up to her and says, goodbye, beep boop. And closes her eyelids. We then cut to two Empathix workers at the house, and Josh is filling them in on the story. He's saying that he thinks his friendship with Kat might have set Iris off, and that she was just jealous, and that's what caused her to murder.
Yeah, normal.
And then he goes, but thank God Deputy Hendricks showed up when he did, because, you know, I could have been next. And we pan over to Patrick in police uniform.
Whoa.
Impersonating Deputy Hendricks. So this Empathix guy says to Patrick, okay, so you shot her in the head? And Patrick can only tell the truth. So he's like, no, she shot herself in the head. And Josh is like, oh, right. I didn't mention that. I think seeing Deputy Hendricks made Iris realize that she could never be with me. So, you know, she ended it.
Oh my God, this story is a mess, bro.
Yeah. And he literally says to them, that makes sense, right? And this empathics guy is like, right. Okay, well, we're just going to take her back to the lab, upload her SSD, and then legal will scrub through her footage, make sure everything's kosher.
Oh my God. This is amazing. Yeah.
So obviously Josh is like, Sorry, what do you mean scrub through her footage?
Her footage!
The empathics worker. This main one is named Sid, who's like doing most of the talking, and then the other one is his little assistant guy, and his name is Teddy.
Okay.
But Sid is like, yeah, it's a fraud detection thing. These robots record everything they see. It's in the user agreement. And thank God her CPU and storage drive is located in her stomach area instead of her head. Otherwise, we would have lost all the footage.
Oh, shucks. Sorry, bud.
Josh is like, yeah, yay for that.
Yay.
And we cut to Sid and Teddy rolling Iris on a stretcher out to the back of their van. And they're talking to each other about how they both think that Josh is like super screwed because he definitely modded her.
So love that.
Once they have Iris in the back and they both get into their seats in the front of the van, they hit the headlights and Patrick is standing in front of the van.
Oh.
And in the house before, Sid thought that Patrick looked kind of familiar, but now it suddenly clicks and he realizes that Patrick is an old model from years ago that this company used to sell.
Ooh.
But they don't really have time to revel in that insight because shots are suddenly fired and Sid dies instantly. He gets like shot in the head. Teddy manages to get out of the passenger door and hide around the side of the van, but Patrick is coming for him. And Patrick's got like the slow, confident walk going on.
Oh God, not the Mike Myers.
Yeah. But Teddy manages to run off into the woods and avoid getting shot. We then get a shot of Iris in the back of the van and they have her hooked up to like a wire that goes into her temple. And there are monitors and one of the monitors says that she's about 60% done rebooting. Meanwhile, Patrick's still shooting after Teddy, who trips over Eli's dead body, obviously freaks out at the sight. I'm not sure exactly what the story was as far as who she murdered because he like is very shocked by this dead body in the woods.
Yeah.
Back to Iris. She's 100% rebooted and she gasps awake.
Ooh.
Back in the woods, Teddy's scrambling backwards from Eli's dead body until his head hits the barrel of Patrick's gun, who's towering behind him. Patrick pulls the trigger, but he's out of bullets. So,
Of course.
Uh-huh. He throws the gun down, grabs Teddy, and pins him up against a tree. But Iris comes up behind Patrick, and she's got a taser, and she tries to tase him, but her own programming isn't letting her put, like, stab it into him because she's been reset to, like, the normal programming now.
Right, okay, yeah. But she still has her, like, memories, it seems.
So this is – I don't know if this is a plot hole, but she does. Okay. Which I'm confused about because I thought like a reset, unless it's just a factory reset. I think there's a difference between total reset and like program factory reset.
Right. Like because you can factory reset your phone without deleting everything on it, right?
Actually, it's definitely – yeah. It's definitely not a plot hole because they said like they have to scrub the footage. So they're not going to like completely reset to like wipe memories. They're just like setting her programming back to what it should be and like removing the mod.
Right, so footage is almost the same thing as memories in this case, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah, she can't hurt Patrick, and Patrick knows that, so he smacks her across the face, and she falls to the ground. So all Iris can do now is try to get through to him. She tells him that Josh doesn't love her, that he's just using him like he used her. He's about to go in to tase her himself. He has the taser now, but she says to him, "It feels like pain. It's angry and violent and bright." So she's reciting the way that she heard him describe love to Eli. And Patrick starts to remember, and he realizes that Eli is who he really loves. Memories flood back, but when they do, he puts the taser into his own mouth and kills himself.
No.
Yeah. Or rather, like, as a robot, you know, he, like, destroys himself, shuts out.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, because, like, I think he remembered how much he loved him, and then he remembered that he's dead now.
Yeah.
Once Patrick is dead, Teddy coughs from like a nearby tree and is like, "Thank you." And Iris just tells him that she's going to need his help with something. Back inside the house, Josh is packing up all his money when he hears the front door open and he expects it to be Patrick. But of course, it's Iris. And Iris informs him that she made a new friend today, Teddy from Empathics, and he gave her a little gift, total self-control. Patrick doesn't believe her at first, but when he pulls out his phone and tries to mess with her settings, it keeps giving him an error.
Oh my God.
So once realization dawns on him, he's like, "You fucking bitch." And she doesn't like that, so she points a gun at him and says, "Easy there." He rolls his eyes and he's like, "Yeah, okay, we both know it's not loaded." So she shoots and a bullet flies through the wall behind him, like making him jump and cower. Mm-hmm. And she smiles and tells him, "I found the bullets."
Found him, buddy.
he screams the obvious at her. He's like, you almost fucking shot me.
Yup.
She lowers the gun and pouts a little and says, and I feel terrible about it. But then she brightens up and she's like, oh my God, look, my first lie. That was kind of fun.
Ooh.
Josh is over this and just asks why she came back here. And she says, I needed to tell you to your face that your days of controlling me are over. You are nothing to me. And he starts walking toward her and her gun is back up and at the ready. She screams at him not to come any closer, that she can kill him now. But he walks right up to her until the gun is against his chest and says, I know you can, but you won't. You love me too much. And she just stares up at him like not much she can say to that because I think it is true.
And okay.
He takes the opportunity to grab her by the back of her head and like throw her into the closest wall.
Oof.
He has the gun now and he tucks it into the back of his pants. Iris is trying to crawl away from him, but he keeps following her around the house, like telling her how he's everything to her, throwing her around. And eventually he gets on top of her and tells her to say it, to tell him that he's everything to her, even if it's a lie. And eventually she breaks down and she says it.
Ugh.
Josh says, thank you, Beep Boop. You don't know how nice that is to hear. Then while still straddling her, he pulls the gun out, aims it at her stomach.
Oh my God.
Yeah, of course. And he gives her like an any last words moment. And Iris says something, and you might think something the way that I did, but it doesn't mean that. It's just, okay. Iris says, go to sleep, Josh. And she has a hold of the electric wine bottle opener. And it like hits it against his temple and it turns on and like corkscrews into his skull.
Ooh, yeah. Gross.
So blood everywhere. He collapses dead on top of her. When she first said, go to sleep, Josh, I was like, how the fuck is he a robot too? That doesn't make any sense.
No, but I would have thought the same thing. I would no, that's crazy.
Yeah, no, but it was just like her like chance to say it. You
it
know?
Was cheeky, you know? Yeah.
So we then cut to daytime. And Iris is taking a shower. Her right hand and forearm are completely charred from the fire. And
ooh, yeah.
She starts to peel back all of the skin to reveal what is underneath. And when she sees the robotics inside her, she smiles. And I think it's because she's like discovering and witnessing who she really is for the first time.
Wow.
We end the movie with her packing up and driving away from the house with her freedom while she repeats the monologue that actually was spoken right at the beginning of the movie, but I left it out.
Okay.
So she says, I did like cut some of it down, but she says, we're all just stumbling around, directionless, no sense of meaning or purpose. I know that might sound super depressing, but honestly, I think it's a good thing because it makes us appreciate the other times. Those brief transcendent moments when the lights flicker on and you see the world for what it really is. Suddenly there's purpose and meaning. If you're lucky, you'll experience this once in your lifetime. For me, it happened twice. The first was the day I met Josh, and the second, the day I killed him.
Damn.
And that is the movie. There's this silly little post-credit scene where she's driving down the road and there's someone next to her or like driving next to her. And it's like this man in the driver's seat. And then it's another one of her in the passenger seat.
Ooh.
Like, and they both look at each other and like they see that they look the same. And obviously the robot, her with the man, is very confused.
Yeah.
And our Iris like lifts up her hand and waves, like the one that's all robotics.
Yeah.
And then the girl in the car is like, oh my God. And Iris just like laughs and keeps driving ahead.
Dude, you just traumatized your other self like hardcore.
That is so crazy.
Wow. I had no idea this was a robot movie, so damn was I just taken on a journey.
That made it so fun. I'm so happy it worked out.
Whoa.
Like that.
That's an insane concept.
Yeah. Okay. Final survivability score for this final act.
I gotta think about this for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot that goes on. There's a lot of decisions. There's a lot of physicality, a lot of intelligence.
Yes. And then human wise, for sure, I would be like much lower than I put myself. But yeah, keeping it as like we're robots, we're Iris. It's still a lot to get through.
Yeah, because what I said 68 before, it has to be lower than that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say 45.
Okay.
Why are you laughing?
Oh, I did 65.
Whoa. Okay. Yeah,
I did 65 because I think it's just coming back to like the robot strength and intelligence for me, where I'm like, okay, I do think I am in the top 50% with her. It's almost like, it's so weird because I don't know. It's like I'm kind of basing it on myself, but also I'm basing it on the actual character more than usual.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a mix up. But I just think even when she dies, like bullet through the head, it really comes down to what you do when you wake up from that, because that's kind of when your final stretch, your final chance is given. And in that, I do think I would take that route of like trying to get through to Patrick. I think I would have had him taken care of in the same way where at least he wouldn't have hurt Teddy. And I definitely also would have ended up getting that total control from Teddy. I do think I would have been able to pull that off, most likely. I'm not at 100 or anything, but and then it comes down to like that final fight with Josh, right. And it's like his ego, his moment, yes, of being like any last words, yes, type of thing.
Exactly.
Again, it opens up like that chance of survivability for us. So I am staying at 65 as like that final act. And then that also makes my like total final score, because then what we're doing is like taking the first act survivability score, second and third, and averaging all of those together. So my final score for the entire movie is 79%. You can explain your 45, and while you do that, I'm gonna calculate overall.
Got it.
Oh, you did? Okay, perfect.
I did do it. No, but like my final 45 is, because I think for me, I'm giving myself more control than the robot side. Mm-hmm. Just because it's such a complex issue, because it all goes back to what is programming and what is yourself. And I'm just looking at like, but like you said, Josh's ego is his biggest enemy in that final scene, because he should have had her.
Mm-hmm.
Easily should have had her. Like, he had the gun, she was down, but it does come down to a stabbing at the end too, which is always my weakness.
A very brutal one at that.
A super brutal one. I just feel like there's too many steps that I have to get right to get to the end, which is why I'm gonna go below 50.
Yeah.
And the if I was purely human, it would be much lower.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. So I think if I did my math correctly, my final is a 68%.
Okay. That's actually not too far apart. I really like this, like splitting it up like this. It's cool.
Yeah.
So then what does that mean for our combined? I'm 79, you're 68.
73.74.
74%. That feels right to me.
Yeah.
Do you think, this is hard to wrap your brain around too, but do you think you could have superseded the love link when it came to his manipulation and your love there for him still, even now that you have total control? Like, do you think you would be manipulated by him in the moments where he's like, we can still be together? Or that moment at the end when he's like, you can't kill me because you love me. And she did falter there, which is how he got the upper hand at one point.
I think I want to be like, no, I would fight through it. But I do feel like that would take me over. That would take me over without being a robot. Let's be real. I got low standards.
No, it's hard because it's like, so like, if I was a human, this. If I was a robot, this. Like, right, for so much of this movie. So it's really hard with the emotional manipulation aspect, because it's not even emotional manipulation. It's like programming manipulation. I don't know. It's weird.
It's very complex. I think this is such an interesting movie to have done, because it's not just a pure survivability. It, like the presence, or presence, it's like one more very complex survivability conversations.
Yeah. And you guys like listening, obviously we always end it like encouraging you to check out the Discord, check out the Instagram, and submit your own survivability score. You don't have to base your survivability score the same way, in the same things that we do. Like, whatever you think you want to base it off of, that's valid for you. If you want to like do the little three-step check-in along with us, that would be super fun if you want to have more like structure to how you get your final score. But again, go ahead and just do what feels right. I feel very good with our 74%, and I'm so excited that I finally watched this movie.
I know, it's been a long time coming.
I have to say, this is one where I would really, really encourage you to eventually watch it yourself, because I did have to like leave out so much, and there's so much funny tonal moments that are worth a watch.
And I think the watching like that first act will be interesting with the information that there's robots and like you're going to be able to pick up on little things. And yeah, for sure.
100%. Check out the Discord, submit your scores, and let us know, would you survive?